This is Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Catherine Loper.
And I'm Jason Smith. How often do you get to save a child's life for as little as $250? That's one of the many questions posed by Smile Train, an international children's charity that provides free cleft repair surgery and care to children in developing countries. Cleft lip or cleft palate affects 1 in 700 children worldwide, and it's not just a matter of aesthetics.
A lot of complications come with cleft lip or cleft palate. Our first guest is Dr. Christopher Viazzi, an oral surgeon with the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He spoke with Take Care producer Leah Landry about the causes and complications of cleft lip and palate.
What is a cleft palate or a cleft lip exactly?
Well, cleft lip and palate are a set of problems that are noted in patients. It's a notch typically in the upper lip, an isolated cleft lip, but patients can also have a notch that goes all the way back through the upper jaw, the palate, and even into the soft palate. So it really is a spectrum of problems that involve a defect in those tissues.
And do they always occur together, or is there a chance that you could have one and not the other?
They don't always occur together, although frequently they're noted together. It's more common, really, that they're together than isolated.
And what causes this condition? Is there a particular risk factor?
There are some known risk factors. Most cases, we really don't know what causes these problems. Some of the risk factors include exposure to environmental pathogens and such, things like cigarette smoke, alcohol use. There are some associations with medications, for instance, seizure medications in patients who have seizure disorders. There's a variety of things that can affect development of babies in utero.
And what are the complications that arise that are associated with these conditions?
Well, it really depends on the age, and it depends on to what extent some of these problems have already been repaired. As an example, babies who are born as having just cleft lip or cleft palate, their biggest initial problem is feeding. Because there's a communication with the nose, babies cannot form a good suction. So whether they're breastfed or bottle fed, there are significant issues with suction. In patients who have problems with the soft palate, as an example, they can have difficulty with speech because the soft palate does not close completely against the back of the throat, and therefore they can get nasal speech or an escape of air up through the nose. And in addition, all of these problems impact normal growth and development of the middle part of the face. So these patients, in almost all instances, will go on to need reconstructive operations over time to address all of those problems.
So the treatment is reconstructive surgery. Could you tell us a little about that?
Well, on average, these patients who are born, let's just say, with a cleft lip and palate, will have on average about 10 to 11 surgeries by the time they are young adults, by age 18. And it's a sequence of things that begins early on with repair of the lip and then moves forward with repair of eventually of the palate, eventually also bone grafting of the upper palatal bone, the hard palate. And sometimes there's a need to actually move the upper or lower jaws into different locations because of an impact on facial growth and development. Finally, there are problems with the nose that require multiple nasal surgeries, things like a rhinoplasty, and other kinds of functional and aesthetic operations. So it's a sequence of things that begins usually early on at about 10 weeks of age with the lip repair and goes all the way up through young adulthood.
So that's obviously a lot of surgeries if it's, 10 to 11 over the first few years of life. Are the surgeries themselves fairly simple, or are there complications? Is there any risk involved in getting the reconstructive surgeries?
Well, there's risk in terms of the actual operation, and there's always risk with anesthesia because almost all of these operations require general anesthesia. General anesthesia is extremely safe today, but particularly for newborn infants, there are concerns about the impact of general anesthesia very early in their lives. And over the last 5 to 10 years, we've started to have even more concern about the overall impact of anesthesia on anybody, including adults. So minimizing the number of interventions is important. Many times, patients will have multiple procedures completed by different surgical teams, even in one intervention. And so we try very hard to minimize the anesthesia risk.
And these patients, over the course of their lives, say later on when they're 10, 12, 15, are there other follow-ups, speech therapy or orthodontic practices that they'll then have to go through as a result of this?
The majority of these patients are treated, and it's clear that they're best served to be treated in a what's called a craniofacial center, such as Mayo Clinic and perhaps 125 other centers nationally that have teams of not only surgeons but also ancillary staff. As an example, most of these teams will have a plastic surgeon, an oral and maxillofacial surgeon, an ENT surgeon, a pediatrician, speech and language pathologists, social workers, geneticists, and others, orthodontists, pediatric dentists, that all support a multidisciplinary approach to these patients. And in those cases, patients are able to come in and they're able to see that entire team in one very efficient visit rather than going to 5 or 6 or 10 different providers in different locations. And so ideally, a child enters into that when they're born and stays with that same craniofacial team until adulthood, rather than just going to different providers at different times.
Thanks so much for being with us, Dr. Viazzi.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Dr. Christopher Viazzi of the Mayo Clinic speaking with producer Leah Landry. Viazzi is an oral surgeon in practice for over 20 years who specializes in pediatric and adolescent medicine, among other things.
And on a side note, there's an incredible story of him acting as a first responder along with two other Mayo Clinic doctors on a flight from Minnesota to Amsterdam 3 years ago. We'll link you to that story at WRVO.org.
You may have seen or heard a Smile Train commercial on TV or radio. Those same commercials are how the organization reaches their patients and even doctors in developing countries. Cleft lip isn't completely understood in these places. There's even a lot of stigma attached to the condition.
But the thing is, the condition is solvable. With reconstructive surgeries and some follow-up procedures, children born with a cleft lip or palate can live a normal life. Susanna Schaefer joins us to talk more about Smile Train's involvement on the front lines of cleft care. She talked with our Leah Landry.
1 in 700 children in developing countries suffer from cleft lip and or cleft palate and then those related complications. So why so many children and why the developing world?
Well, interestingly enough, it's not just the developing world. It's 1 in 700 births worldwide. So around the world, there's approximately 170,000 cleft births per year. It might feel that it's more prevalent in certain countries. There could be countries in Asia, for instance, where it could affect 1 in 500. Why that's the case, we do not know, but the WHO figures are 1 in 700.
What is Smile Train's role in facilitating these reconstructive surgeries?
So our philosophy was built on creating a sustainable model to treat cleft. So our approach was a teach a man to fish approach. So instead of giving a man a fish to eat for a day, the philosophy was, just as Confucius said, you teach a man to fish and he learns for a lifetime how to fish. So it's training more surgeons, providing them the funding and the resources they need so they can treat cleft in their own communities. So that's empowering surgeons, it's empowering nurses, it's empowering anesthetists. It's a holistic approach to cleft, and it's building sustainability, it's building capacity in country, and we're thrilled to be able to provide the funding and resources to do just that.
Is there a Smile Train success story that really sticks out in your mind?
There are so many. We have treated, believe it or not, over 1 million children since we started in 1999. So I feel like there are 1 million of those special stories. For me, one that sticks out so clearly is the story of our 1 millionth patient, which is Osawa Owiti, a little boy from Tanzania who was living with an untreated cleft until he was 6 years old. When his mother, Ada, heard about Smile Train and free cleft surgery over the radio, she wasn't sure why she had a child born with a cleft. People, you know, in communities surrounding hers told her it was because she laughed at cripples. There's so many of these stigmas and just misunderstandings of what causes cleft, because there is no known cause. you don't know why your child was born with a cleft, and then you don't know that there's help and that there is a smile train out there. But luckily enough, she heard about it on the radio, and she took Osawa with her and made a 700-mile journey from her small village in Tanzania to Dar es Salaam to our partner hospital there, CCBRT, had Osawa examined, and he was cleared for surgery and had his life-changing surgery. And 6 months after his surgery, I had the opportunity to go visit his village in Tanzania and meet his family, meet Ada, meet his dad, his brothers and sisters, his grandparents. It was an amazing opportunity to see, 6 months after the life-changing surgery, a little boy smiling with a real happy smile, flourishing with his friends. I met his teacher. It just really brought full circle to me what we do and what's happening every day.
That's incredible. You mentioned a partner hospital. Tell me about the relationships you establish with area hospitals, surgeons, and care providers.
So Smile Train employs people around the world, and we have a team in Africa that will work in local communities to identify hospitals that could be potential Smile Train partner hospitals. Africa is a challenging place. For instance, there are very few plastic surgeons. The surgeon who operated on Osawa is the only cleft surgeon in Tanzania. The goal is to be able to train more surgeons so that more children can be treated. So how we work with the partner hospitals is our staff identifies, as I said, potential hospitals that could be Smile Train partners, and then they work with them to check through their safety and quality protocol. They have to meet certain levels of standards to be able to have Smile Train funding. We have to make sure they have all the proper equipment, people are trained accordingly, and then they're signed on as a Smile Train partner, and we would then sign an agreement and be able to fund them and do the pay-per-surgeries for the cleft surgeries.
Now, the surgery isn't the whole story, of course. Could you talk about some of the other obstacles you encounter when providing care?
Well, obstacles in the developing world could be patient mobilization. So just referring back to Osawa, I mean, his family had to travel 700 miles for him to have his surgery. And then also, as I mentioned, Ada heard about Smile Train from the radio. So awareness is another. It's probably in our annual partner survey, still the biggest obstacle to care is awareness, second being patient mobilization. So it's still even awareness on what cleft is. It's not just that there is Smile Train that can help, but even having people understand if they see a child with an untreated cleft, what it is, and that there is Smile Train who can support them.
Is there hope for reducing occurrences of cleft lip and cleft palate?
Of course, but we're not there yet. There is no known cause. It happens sometime during that gestational period when just body parts are not aligning, which would leave a hole in cause a cleft. I hope we can be at one time taking funding and be able to put it behind some research. That, of course, is a goal of ours, but we're just not there yet.
Is there work being done to treat at the source, whether that is, like you talked about, more education, more comprehensive health care even?
Well, we are very focused now working with our partners because of their request to us to treat the holistic approach to cleft. As we've advanced in the 17 years since Smile Train started, we were able to get behind a lot of the backlog of untreated clefts. So our goal is to find the children as young as possible. You want that life change to happen at such a young age. But we got to break through those barriers that are there. And awareness is still probably number one. And even awareness here in the U.S. on what cleft is, the severities of cleft. I think it's very misunderstood that it's not just a cosmetic issue, which in the developing world is really how it's seen. And a child with an untreated cleft, especially if they have an open palate, has problems eating, will never be able to speak normally. Breathing can even be an issue. Ear infections can be an issue. So it really is a medical problem.
So you've seen positive change over the years?
Lots of positive change. And it certainly makes you feel good.
Now, part of your strategy at Smile Train is obviously appealing to emotion. Your website says things like, give a child a smile, as little as $250 can change a child's life forever. How does that compassion-fueled, donation-based model work for Smile Train?
Well, it definitely makes things very tangible to a donor. When you think about the cost involved in the developing world, to fund the cost of surgery, and that it could be as little as $250, when you put that into context here in the U.S. and what we spend $250 on pretty easily, and knowing that you can make a difference in someone's life, it's something very tangible for a donor to feel good about. So it is a good marketing message when you are trying to raise funding. But the reality behind it is that it's true and it's there and it's possible. And, you know, just as I have the opportunity to see that life change and that feel-good change for these kids and for their families and for the mother when they see their child right after surgery, it makes you feel good to give back.
So if this works so well, why do you think more organizations aren't doing something similar? Doctors Without Borders comes to mind. But with all the politics behind medical funding in other realms, is this a way, do you think, to have a real impact?
We've definitely had an impact. And I think all of these charities, I mean, we're all working together to promote global health care, access to good health care, access to surgery in the developing world. Charities have to unite in this regard. And there are many groups now. There's the G4 Alliance that's just trying to come together to promote global surgical care and the level of care, the quality of care. And we're thrilled to be a part of that and be at the forefront. And that's how we can work together.
It's grassroots at the end
grassroots,
of the day, right?
It's community-based engagement.
Mm-hmm. What's the future like for the work that you do?
Well, our future, we're very much focused on building sustainability in the countries that we're working in. We would love to see our programs become self-sustainable. I mean, that's kind of like saying we want to be put out of a job at Smile Train. But isn't that the ultimate goal? You want the level of cleft care outside the United States, outside of Europe, to be the same that we have. I don't know if that'll happen in our lifetime, but you know, we're making strides towards sustainability. In a country like India, where we've been working for over 10 years, we do about 50,000 surgeries a year in India. There's now personal wealth in India. Corporations are thriving in India. The government there has mandated that corporations give back a percentage of their profit to local charities to help Indian children. So now we're able, we have a wholly owned subsidiary in India. We're able to raise funding now in India that is directly going back to cleft children in India. So corporations, individuals are taking care of children in their own communities. It's small considering our annual budget for India, but we're making steps and strides towards sustainability. So it's great.
Thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you.
Susanna Schaefer is the CEO of Smile Train.